Episode 22. All right, guys, we're getting right into it. So today, the Nevada State Athletic Commission is having some sort of meeting. I don't know. I wake up to Twitter, and guys like John Morgan over at MMA Junkie and Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports, I follow those guys. They're smart guys. Everybody should follow those guys. And they always bring, you know, what's happening, you know, in the world of MMA and then sports in general. And they're tweeting about some sort of a Nevada State Athletic Commission meeting or you know, sharing of information. And it's about the drug testing. It's all talking about, you know, the CIR, the carbon isotope ratio that's involved in drug testing for mixed martial artists. And they're kind of like not arguing. Well, it seems like the commission is just putting out this information. It's just really not non-information, I think. And just to like, you know, all right, so that's kind of like inspired me to talk about this today because it's rather current. And I have some pretty strong feelings here. So I actually put out some tweets saying, test everybody. Enough of it. They're like, oh, you know, do Nevada, I think they look at for like a 6-to-1 ratio. I don't completely understand that, but it's basically the average man, let's say, will have a 2-to-1 or a 4-to-1 ratio. And Nevada sets the limit at 6-to-1 to make sure that, like, even the most super of men, you know, the guys with the really high testosterone, that those guys don't get, you know, accused of being a cheat. So they said it's 6-to-1. And there's an argument, is that too high? And, you know, there's all these studies and whatnot. Jesus Christ, just test everybody, you know, this is my thing, just test everybody, stop blaming the athletes. Everybody points fingers at the athletes. That's what pisses me off, because I see how hard the freaking athletes work, and most of these athletes are drug-free. They're freaking hard training, legitimate professionals, and they gotta swim in this muddy water, because everybody's talking about drug testing. Just drug test everybody, and be done with it. Everybody, test everybody, test everything on everybody. MMA, mixed martial artists, they have to submit blood work constantly. They're subject to drug testing every time they compete. They're the most drug-tested athlete on the planet other than, you know, the higher professional sports or professional athletes will say. They're always tested. So if they're always being tested, what's the problem? Just get the testosterone test, get whatever test that the doctors and the lawyers need to really make sure everybody's clean, you know, have it overseen by the most respected body of the brightest minds in all the fields necessary, and just test them, test everybody. And then I put out that tweet and I got a bunch of tweets back saying, well, it's money. That's the problem. So they're gonna do this dog and pony show about a 4-to-1 ratio or a 6-to-1 ratio, and you know, just you know, do they do a you know, like a urine test, or should it be, you know, a blood, you know, just whatever it is. It's a dog and pony show. Just test everybody. The state doesn't have enough money. The commission doesn't have enough money. You know, well, this department doesn't have enough money. You know, and that's really everyone's, oh, we don't have enough money here, so we can't do it. You know, we can barely do what we do now, and we need a little bit more even. I mean, it's government. We need a little bit more even to do what we're doing now. Jesus, the copier just broke. I mean, that's the way government agencies, most agencies, that's the way everybody works. Everybody's looking for a little bit more, you know, to get more to do just a little bit less. And that's the progression. But if this is really an issue, if it's really an issue, then the answer is simple. Just test everybody. The athletes are fine. The athletes don't want to have to take drugs. They don't have to worry about the dude in front of them that's taking drugs, you know? Nobody wants to have to worry about that. Test everybody. The athletes are clean. They know they're clean. They'll be tested. They're being tested anyway. And make the records private. It's not my business. It's not your business. It's nobody's business. Make the records sealed and private under the most legal of circumstances, so nobody has to know that you have anemia or you have a family history of what have you. You know, nobody has to know that, but the mind, the advisory board, this really smart dudes, the really qualified guys, They're the only one, only three other people outside your family in the world get to see your document. And they get to have the database and they get to look back and they say, holy shit, in 1997 when you turned pro, this is what your levels were, this is what your ratio was. And every 4 months when you competed since then, we got another reading and another reading and another reading all the way through. All problems are solved. You don't have to worry about the testosterone exemption where Nevada, they allow exemptions, but they said they won't allow it to people that have previously failed for or that caused the need for the testosterone because they cheated in the past or they used it in the past or it was a self-inflicted issue. So there's something, some weird screwy, you know, language like that. Just test everybody. Test everybody for as long as you can so you already have the database so you know, if the guy's testosterone is X and it slowly maintains or it drops or it peaks dramatically. Come on, then you know, it's obvious. And of course, I'm sure there's all the scientific data that they can forensically, you know, fingerprint somebody, telling them exactly, you know, what they did and when and how they cheated. And then boom, there's a protocol set in place for that. So if a person does get in trouble, they get caught with something, there's a private protocol because it hurts the sport. It hurts the athlete. It hurts the industry. It hurts the sponsorships. It hurts the public. I was a huge baseball fan. I remember going to Shea Stadium with my father, with my family, taking the train up from my town in Belmar. We'd take the train up. We'd make a day of it. And we'd go watch baseball. You know, at Shea Stadium or Yankee Stadium up in New York. I mean, that was like the biggest thing ever when baseball was America's sport. And then all the drug stuff, all the Mark McGwire and the Sammy Sosa and the Barry Bonds and all the drug stuff and all the headlines came in. And it became an embarrassment. And I lost interest in baseball. I lost the love of the sport because it wasn't just the sport. It was the culture around it. It was the lifestyle. It was the good vibes, the good feeling, you know, the positive sunny day and energy. And that was taken away. If you just test everybody, then it was because of a conference, like three guys ruined the sport, you know, roughly, you know, for hundreds of millions, for generations to come. You know, baseball just disappeared for my generation and many others. So now with MMA, you see these headlines pop up and it's interesting because over in UFC in Brazil, there's a lot of headlines, making accusations about Vitor Belfort for, you know, possible PED use. And this is even before the fight. And then after the fight, actually, because he looked so great and he did so well. And then the accusations are even bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and just headlines, it was constant headlines. And so the drug test come back and rumor and somebody failed and boom, more headlines. Vitor Belfort, he's on the photo. He's the picture of his chiseled, ripped, you know, Greek style, you know, statuesque physique. I mean, he looks like the epitome of what you would be accusing. And what happens? And Thiago Tavares fails the drug test. Vitor Belfort did not. I saw Thiago Tavares on one headline and it was like a small headline and it just moved right through the news stream. That was not news. That a guy actually failed the drug test was not news. What the drug testing, the PED news was about Vitor Belfort, who didn't do anything wrong, who didn't do anything illegally, who was under a sanctioned testosterone program. But he was treated like a villain as a result of that. And that's the issue. So if you test everybody, you know their history from day one, then guys like Vitor, who claims a true need for it, and doctors and commissioners and lawyers, I believe, agreed because he received the exemption. I don't know enough about, I'm not on that side, but I see it and I know it's happening. And I believe him as a human being. What a great person and a dedicated athlete, just like thousands around the world. But these headlines pop up and these guys right now, they're talking about, you know, oh, they're going to fix it. And they're going to, oh, we're going to reconvene again in another month or two. We're going to sit down and we're going to talk about this again, you know, 6-1 or 4-1. You know, what's that going to be? Just freaking test everybody. And then it's, oh, we're poor. We don't have the money to do that. There's the money. The money's out there. The money can be found. That's bullshit. There's a lot of smart people around. You can find money. You can make money. You can certainly free up money. You know, maybe you don't need that extra copying machine. Maybe you need less. Maybe you don't need Shirley sitting over in that desk too. Maybe you don't need a lot of this incidentals that's around here. Maybe you should make it a priority. If athletes' health and safety is your priority, isn't that the job? Isn't that the job, you know, first and foremost, is to protect the health and the safety of the athlete, the individual competing, not the bureaucracy, nothing else in between, not sanctioning fees and anything else. The initial motive should be the health and safety of the athlete. If that's true, then all the money should be directed towards this program, and whatever else is left over turns on the lights. You work off a skeleton crew. How's that sound? Isn't that fair? The money's out there. This is, you know, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars flow through these businesses, flow through this industry. The money's there, and the smart people are there, and there's ways to offset it. The athlete should pay. Also, as part of their medical requirements, that should be a part of it also. The promoters should pay a part of it because they need and want and are invested in healthy, safe athletes. Everybody else involved. And I don't even know who else is deeply involved. You know, sponsorships or just whatever organizations or other private and public companies that would step in and help and be a part of this. I think it's very, very simple, very easy, unless it's about money. And you got these dudes in suits wearing, you know, just worried about the money, worried about the cash, worried about their job, their lifestyle, what people are going to think about to them, their power. How does this change the status quo? How does this change the structure? And there's nobody, no names in particular that I could say or could point to. It's just as the industry, as this is, it's like politics. It's the same thing. So the athletes are the ones suffering, and it's this dog and pony show. That's the BS. If you just test everybody, it goes away. Oh, it's about the money. Well, then talk about the money. Talk about the freaking money then. Don't be talking, you know, talk about what the ratio should be. Test everybody. Test everything. Know everything that you need to know that retains or that pertains to their health and the possibility of PED use or cheating. Check all those levels, all those ratios. Have all that data. Every time they compete, which is typically 3 times a year, and every time they sign up for a license, maybe they do the big test when they get a license every year, and then, you know, every time they compete, they do an expansive PED test. They're all subject to random testing. It doesn't mean that they all will be, but if you become a state-sanctioned licensed athlete, somebody from the state or, you know, retained by the state could knock on your door at any given point. They could show up at your gym. They could come anytime, anywhere. And you say, yeah, that's cool. Will they come to you? Maybe, maybe not, probably not. Because, you know, how many? There's 500 athletes, I think, in the UFC or under Zuffa. You know, that's a lot right there. And then there's, you know, 5,000 in Las Vegas and 50,000 in Nevada. So it spreads out. But you're subject to it. You never know. That phone call could ring. So, I mean, those are great, easy steps forward. And how much money does that cost? If you know, if somebody knows, you know, if you're qualified, if you are in the industry, and I'm going to have some guys on here soon, but you out there, keep the conversation going. You know, I want to hear and talk about this a little bit more. Maybe we can help. If it's just about the money, if that's the only issue, well, let's find the money. Find the money or find where the current money's going and see if we can, you know, put that to better use. You know, see if we can help and assist. Where's that information? I'd like to see that too. You know, moving on from that issue, just something to think about. I mean, chew on that a little bit. You know, what's really the issue here? What's really the issue? The issue is PED use in sports and health and fighter safety. Just test everybody. That's boom. That's done. It's easy. The athletes already agree to testing. So it's the athletes want the testing. They're happy for the testing. They want to make sure that they're competing on an even playing field. They don't want to have to put themselves in harm's way to pay their mortgage. They don't want to have to, you know, deal with the guy on the super drugs that nobody's ever heard of, you know, maybe except for Lance Armstrong. Can I say that? Allegedly. Was he convicted? I don't know. Was he convicted? But at least linked to it, you know, allegedly. Everything I say is alleged. Interesting. So now you got guys like George St. Pierre, who at the, you know, he beats Nick Diaz in a very good fight, very grueling fight. George St. Pierre is one of the greatest athletes of all time, greatest athletes on the planet, a gentleman. I remember seeing George St. Pierre, where was I? In one of the UFCs, the early UFCs. I was there with Matt Lindland, I think, or Nate Quarry, I forget who, back in the super early days. And George St. Pierre was there, and he, I think it was after his first fight in the UFC, and David Loazzo, that's when Loazzo had some steam. David Loazzo actually wound up fighting for the UFC middleweight title, and GSP was just one of David's training partners. You know, he was kind of the young kid with talent, you know, kind of like the little Rory McDonald, you know, kind of over in the corner, you know, helping out, being there. I mean, no disrespect to GSP. I mean, he was a fucking stud phenom at that point, but he just got in the UFC, so he was a new pro. And he's evolved since then. I mean, obviously, one of the greatest athletes of all time, certainly the greatest, you know, one of the greatest MMA champions, UFC champions of all time. And he's just the same cool guy, same nice. And I remember the first time you see somebody, he was standing there, his hands in his pockets. He was on the side of the mat. David was training with his coach. He was wearing actually a white sweater, and he was just like smiling, and he was, you know, friendly and shaking hands. And like the other teams walk by, and he's just, you know, good energy, good vibe. Up until this day, now he's got the $5,000 suits, and he's got the, you know, the team of handlers and entourages and professionals and, you know, people around him, as he should. He's now that multi-million dollar business. As he floats through his space, he's still the same guy. Still the same guy. So I got a lot of respect, obviously, for George St. Pierre. And I'm really excited to be working with Johnny Big Rig Hendricks, who's the number one contender to George St. Pierre's title, for those of you that don't know. So my guy, Johnny Hendricks, is competing against George St. Pierre, hopefully towards the end of summer, hopefully in August, for the UFC welterweight title. Very exciting. One of the guys we respect the most, I respect the most, we're competing against. So Johnny fought on the undercard. Johnny was the co-main event. GSP was the main event. GSP won the title. Johnny won, beat Carlos Condit, the former number one welterweight contender. Condit, who fought GSP last, gave GSP the toughest test of GSP's career. Condit actually almost finished GSP, knocked him down, dropped him with a head kick. Boom. Dropped GSP. And GSP, being such a stud superstar, was able to fight through, battle back, and win the fight. I mean, it was a scrap in a war. So Johnny beats Condit in fight of the night. They actually won the UFC fight of the night bonus that night. I mean, that's pretty awesome on top of everything else. Johnny's the dude. So we're at the press conference, and they're actually sitting side by side, Johnny and GSP. And GSP's talking. Everyone wants, you know, answers from the champ. And Nick Diaz had made a comment that he alleged that George had been on PEDs, performance enhancers. And George at the press conference said, you know, that's ridiculous. I'm a lifelong drug-free athlete. I welcome drug testing. I welcome Olympic-style drug testing. That's what I'm talking about. The athletes want the testing. George wants the testing. Now, I know Johnny Hendricks wants the testing. Johnny Hendricks is a lifelong drug-free athlete. The first time I met Johnny Hendricks, I was like, oh, you know, so tell me about yourself, what you do, you this, that, and the other thing. And he's like, well, like I took this, you know, I forget what the darn stuff, it was like a protein supplement. And that was like, that was the most, you know, PED that this kid had ever taken. I mean, he is a farm boy, big, strong American kid. You know, he doesn't take anything, you know, protein powders, muscle milks. Johnny Hendricks, you know, he only eats for flavor, you know. He doesn't eat for sports supplement. He doesn't even understand that stuff because he's never needed it. And so George St. Pierre said he likes the Olympic-style drug testing. He wants the Olympic-style drug testing. I believe Johnny Hendricks would love the Olympic-style drug testing. I would love to see that. And I haven't spoken to Hendricks or the camp about that. I'm just kind of vamping and talking right now and kind of coming to this. Do you think that would be a good deal? Do you think that that would take away from the competition if Johnny and George did have Olympic-style drug testing leading into the UFC world welterweight title fight? You know, truly, I mean, two of the toughest guys on the planet. Having the Olympic-style drug testing, would that take away? Would that cause a distraction, that headline, because everybody would be focused on that, talking about that? Or would that add, because now, look, these are the two most talented, gifted, you know, devastating guys on the planet, and they don't need PEDs. They're not on PEDs. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, how great would that, just the opposite of what baseball did. How many parents out there would see that and say, that's what I want my kid to do. I want to be a part of that. The two top guys open their lives up to the most rigorous testing available, 24-hour-a-day testing. The entire time, the entire training camp, they would deal with that. I mean, just to clean up the name and to get these headlines away, clear up the name of MMA and show this is what can be done. Test us, test everybody, test the best. If the best don't need it, then nobody else should. I think that would do such wonders. But again, it's not up to me. It's just a conversation here on the Mike Dolce Show. The Mike Dolce Show. All right, we do not have responsibility for what this dickhead is saying. It's a disclaimer. I disclaim this from everything. No, but really, I mean, Jesus Christ, that's never been done before. I mean, Floyd Mayweather tried to do it, and there was problems, but I don't know, there's always problems, it seems, with Floyd Mayweather. I'm a fan of his, in a way. I'm a fan of his athleticism, and I'm a fan of Floyd. You know, whatever. But it's like, that's such a hypocrite, right?
No, you can be a fan of somebody's athleticism, their talent, but not be a fan of all the drama that surrounds them.
Yeah. The drama's interesting, though.
Yeah.
Floyd's drama is interesting. So I don't know. Am I a fan? No, I don't want to say a fan. I'm entertained, though.
You're entertained. He's an entertainer. He's in sports entertainment.
He's in sports entertainment.
So he's doing his job.
Yeah, good job, Floyd.
Yeah.
Dickhead. All right, Brandy, let's hit up some Q&As.
All right. First, we have Justin Konkin on Facebook. He says, I am a single father of a 9-year-old son. I have started following your diet and love it. But a lot of what I eat, my son won't. Any advice for a picky, overweight 9-year-old boy?
Absolutely. Make him the Dolce diet, East Coast breakfast toast, or the pit bull pancakes, or the breakfast bowl, or freeze red grapes. Give that to him. Just don't even let him know it's healthy. Act like it's, you know, babe, don't tell your mom. Here, I have this frozen red grape. Oh, it's so delicious. It's sugar. It's this, you know, whatever. Get him outside. Get outside in the sun and play. Get in the grass. You know, climb a tree. You know, have fun. Build his I mean, I'm not telling you how to, parent, but I see it just, it's all of us. It's natural. It's innate in us. You know, we're made to run and play and frolic, especially when you're kids. Look at animals. Look at the animal kingdom. Think about a puppy or a kitten or a horse just, you know, running through, you know, through the field. You know, baby lions, cubs, they play. That the kids are made to go outside and play and frolic and climb and fall and get bumps and bruises and squeeze through little tunnels and, you know, kind of go places they shouldn't have been behind the little back fence, you know, standing on the ledge. That's what kids are supposed to do. And if they're doing that, the more often they're doing that, well, the more they're using their body and the more they're getting in the habit of using their body. They're building strength. They're increasing flexibility, balance, coordination. So you're actually helping them develop into a strong, stable, capable adult. You're building their frame, their chassis, their ability. You know, you're teaching them how to use their human machine just by encouraging them to go out and play. That's why I ranted before. Like, if you're one of those parents that feed your kids soda and you know, desserts all the time and pizzas and bringing home burgers and KFC and your fast food mom and your, you know, frozen baked food dad, you know, like, you know, bleep you. You know, how dare you? You're that person, you know, once in a blue moon, you got the little thing in the freezer. Yeah, of course. No worries, no problem. But if that's you daily, if you're destroying your child's health, if you're ruining their ability to have a vibrant, healthy, full potential, fully realized life, if that's what you're doing, well, fuck you. How dare you? I'm not talking to you, Justin. So I'm not talking to you. I mean, I'm going, you know, sideways on this a little bit, but I see it all the time. How dare you? What's your problem? Oh, everything you know, you're smart. Everything you know, you're doing the opposite of. You're intentionally making your child sicker. You're intentionally reducing their defenses of major diseases. You're intentionally increasing their risk of contracting major medical issues. You're intentionally doing that because you know. You knowingly are doing that. You're informed. You know. So what are you doing? Feed your kid the right foods. Get your kid outside. Be healthy. Be healthy yourself. Be healthy. Lead by that example. Parents, everybody, all of us. So now, Justin, back to you. Any advice for a picky, overweight 9-year-old boy? Yeah, you got to make it fun. You have to let him think he's cheating while you're feeding him healthy stuff. He doesn't have to know oatmeal is healthy just yet. He just has to know how delicious it tastes. Spoonful of peanut butter on top and, you know, little things like that, a sprinkle of coconut, shaved coconut. I mean, that stuff looks visually, kids will see that and wow, that's awesome. You know, maybe some crushed almonds, so it looks like an ice cream sundae. I mean, there's ways to do it. Greek yogurt with chia seeds sprinkled on top and a chopped fresh fruit or raspberries. It's served in like a cup, just a clear glass cup or like a little ice cream bowl, you know, and some sort of, you know, and some honey or agave, just to drizzle, you know, on top. I mean, it's little snacks. I mean, these are all my desserts. These are all desserts that are in the Living Lean and the Living Lean cookbook. And this is part of the Dolce diet philosophy. This is how we live. It's what we do. Like I talked about Vitor before. Vitor's kids, they love my food more than his parents do, more than Vitor does. His kids, they love the meals. I mean, they hang out in the kitchen, they cook, and they just like, I'll make the first one, or, you know, back, you know, when I have the ability to do that. And they freaking love it. And everybody's kids. And that's what this is about. So if you're feeding them the right foods in the right way, and you're paying mind to the psychological, you know, issues, you know, the developmental issues and, you know, the child's ability to understand his or her environment, you know, and all of those things, of course. If you, you know, play it off or you make it fun, you present it in a fashion that suits your child's imagination and curiosity. It gives them, you know, a positive response. You know, it's Pavlov's dog. You're giving them the carrot. You're not giving them a whack in the ass. They're not, you know, the fat, you know, smelly, poopy, you know, lazy kid anymore. Now they're the, you know, excited, bright-eyed, energetic, slim, strong, fast, handsome, you know, little man now. You know, it's just those little skews, those little things, those little coaching points, talking points. So that's just something to think about. But make it fun, man. Make the recipes fun and kick their butt outside. Have fun. Ah, let's go outside. Let's do this. You know, have fun.
Our next question is from Kyle Maziarski. I love this question. I saw this and I put it aside actually like a day ago because I had to get it on here. He says, I recently had a checkup with my doctor during my spring break and she saw me with a liter of water. She asked, how much water do you usually drink in a day? I replied, anywhere from a gallon to a gallon and a half. She immediately freaked out and told me I don't have to drink that much. I explained that I'm an MMA fighter. And she said, it doesn't matter. If you're drinking that much, you're trying to stay hydrated. And if you're having trouble staying hydrated, you could have diabetes. Thoughts? Because I was immensely confused.
What? That is... Boom! That just blew my mind right there. All right, Kyle. So, first and foremost... I'm going to assume and strongly suggest you are under a qualified doctor's care. Your doctor is in charge of everything you do and knows everything you do. You only do, you know, take on diet and exercise advice with a qualified doctor's care. Now, this story that you're telling me, I'm sure it's not verbatim. So we're going to talk in generalities here. You drink a gallon and a half, one gallon. Which is 8 pounds roughly. It's a little bit less, but so you drink between 8 and 12 pounds of water per day. You are an MMA fighter. You're a man, a grown man. I believe you're an adult. So let's even say if you're 150 pounds, but the average adult male is, you know, typically upwards of 170 pounds. Let's say you're 150. So you're 150 pounds.
He's a college guy.
You're a college guy. Yes, you're a dude. You're a big dude. Even if you're a lighter weight competitor, and that's what we're going to assume. So we don't, you know, we always stay conservative here. Gallon and a half of water a day, you're training once or twice a day. When you're training once or twice a day, you're losing what? 2 to 4, 6 pounds when you train? Just in this sweat. Just when you sweat, because you're an MMA fighter, you're training hard. You're not a jiu-jitsu guy, or you're not a kickboxer. You're an MMA fighter, so you're training in complete MMA. You're wrestling, you're boxing, you're doing strength and conditioning, you're sparring, you're training hard. Typically, MMA fighters, not just MMA trainees, or, you know, I train MMA. MMA fighters are training twice a day, or at least, you know, 2 days on, you know, twice, once, going all the way through. So you're training more than 5 days a week. So you're drinking a gallon and a half of water a day. You're probably eating 4 to 6 meals a day, I'm assuming, on top of that. Now, you're a grown-ass man training once, probably twice a day. You're a college student, so you're going back and forth to classes, and you're studying, you're doing homework, and you're doing all that stuff too. And this individual that you're speaking of says that if you drink that much water, that you'll get diabetes. I don't think understand how that's possible. I would love to see that stat, that result, that scientific study. I would love to see that. So I don't think that's true. But again, get a second opinion from a qualified doctor and see what they say. Maybe there's some underlying medical issue that we're not that we're unaware of course. But I'm not aware of any reason. And let me use myself as an example. So I'm 5'10", 195 pounds. I typically drink 2 gallons of water on the average day. And that's pretty easy. That's pretty easy for me. Most of the athletes that I work with, that I train with, drink about that also. Typically, a gallon and a half is a good estimate on the average day. And the harder you train, the more your body naturally wants to drink. Everybody looks great, feels great, you know, seems to work really well, you know. Now, you could have some sort of insulin issue. You could have some sort of diabetic, you know, tendency, or, you know, maybe that's what your doctor was speaking of. So get that stuff checked out. But I don't think being hydrated, you know, drinking water, I don't really think that's the problem.
Our next question is from Amy Marinaro. She says, my boyfriend recently introduced me to you and your lifestyle, and it has changed my life. I'm a 5'7", female, 22 years old, and ever since high school, I've stayed at a constant weight of 110 pounds. For the past month, I have only been eating earth-grown nutrients and have been working out 4 days a week at the gym. I go to the doctor annually and I'm perfectly healthy. One of my goals is to gain 15 pounds. How can I skew the Dolce diet principles specifically to do this? Should I make sure to always eat every 2 hours and never wait 4 hours between eating? What exercises should I be focusing on at the gym to gain functional weight and muscle? Are there certain earth-grown nutrients that would help me gain weight? I should tell you that I'm a vegetarian, so no meat and no fish. I appreciate the help and the inspiration you've given me to woman up and take control of my health. I've always had low confidence, but seeing the improvement in the appearance of my body from working out and eating healthy has really improved my self-confidence and given me something to be proud of.
Boom. Amy, that's awesome. I'm really happy to hear that. So, you know, to get right to you, I mean, you've made great progress. You're on the path to greatness and you're already great. Now, I mean, what a sick goal. I like it. You want to gain 15 pounds, as a female. So you want to put on more of that functional mass, that lean body weight, those curves and, you know, shapely, strong, healthy, feminine, functional muscle. That's all of our goals. That should always be our goal. As we go through life, we should always be putting on functional muscle. Get stronger, get leaner, get buffer. Why not? Why not? While you're here, or you're just going to get old and die, Grandpa. Yeah, I'm going to whittle away and die.
Is that the guy from Family Guy?
No, Jesus Christ. No, it's just I love Amy's dedication. You know, you could see in this letter that she's dedicated. She's pumped. She wants to put on 15 pounds. So, training stimuli, that's very important. You want to put on 15 pounds. I say we want to add a little bit more lower body work, posterior chain work, glute, hamstring, quad work, lower back work, upper back lat work. But we want to balance it out and keep it feminine. So we're still going to do functional body weight exercises. Things like the deadlift, things like the squat. You can use multiple implements. Bending over and picking something up, that is a deadlift. Check out the DolceDiet.com website. I have a video on there hosted by Bodybuilding.com. I did a few years ago where I instruct you through the high hip deadlift. This is one of my favorite exercises. That's the only exercise I would do if I could only pick one. High hip deadlift, it's similar to a stiff-legged deadlift, but it's a power lifter's approach to it. Really focuses on explosive glutes, hamstring, lower back, quadra in place, nice tight core. I mean, it's just a full body exercise that you can run through walls or fill out jeans, you know, if you pay attention to this one. So Amy, you know, start doing exercises like that. I have the deadlift workout or the leg workout in Living Lean. The push-pull system, I think, from Living Lean would be awesome for you to put on some mass. Do push-pull one for 3 weeks, then flip it, do push-pull two for 3 weeks. Check back into me. I think you'll see some great progress that way. Now, for food, I'd say instead of eating every 2 hours, we want to slow your metabolism down just a little bit. So I'd eat closer to every 4 hours. Slow your metabolism down. So now your body is going to get a little bit heavier. We're going to try not to add any, you know, non-functional weight. But you might add just a little bit. You probably will add just a little bit. But we want to keep that cap very low. So you have to pay attention. I like to make my quantity increments by about 10%. So I'm going to increase my meal size by about 10%. And then keep it fixed for 3 days and see how I adjust. And I'm going to eat a pretty similar menu for these little periods. I'm going to eat, you know, the same type of breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, for maybe a week or so. Then I'm going to increase it. About 10% and see if my body reacts or adjusts. And then after 3 days, I'll increase it again. I mean, it sounds like it's a pain in the ass process. And some of them, you know, some people just never even do that. But in the grand scheme of your 120-year life, it's only, you know, a blink of an eye. It's not even 2 weeks to really get your body dialed in and adjusted. And then once you do that, it's easy to skew in the direction you want. You know, just a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you can feel your body getting a little thicker, a little denser, your skin's filling out a little bit more, and you can direct that growth. Or if you want to go a little bit less, you just pull it down by about 10%. for 3 days and you see how you adjust. Do you feel good or do you feel a little weak, a little tired? Maybe, you know, you got to bring it up just a little bit. So you kind of, you know, put it in cruise control. And then once you're there, then you're just zipping. So Amy, that's what I would say. What are the foods, just the earth grown food, the earth grown nutrients, you know, all the foods on our grocery list, all the foods we recommend in great variety. I think that's the best thing, especially for being healthy first and foremost. But the healthier you are, the more anabolic your body's going to be, especially if you're training properly. If you're eliciting that response through your central nervous system based upon the training application, your body will respond and you will increase in muscular size and strength and tendon strength and durability and flexibility. If you're training in the proper capacity, you'll increase your performance parameters, your athletic parameters. You need to be sleeping also. Sleep a little bit more at night. Sleep more restfully and look to take some downtime, a 20 to 45 minute downtime, you know, nap in the middle of the day. That's very important. This allows your body to slow down a little bit, calm down, let your body repair, get little jumps ahead. Just spring forward just a little bit in your repair, in your recovery. It's very important. Watch your mind calm down. Once your mind calms down, you're much more in control of everything that's happening inside and outside of you. That's a great way. Hopefully that helps you, Amy. I mean, that's the right way to do it. That's the secret pill right there.
Would that go for a man as well?
That's for everybody.
So a guy that wanted to gain muscle too. Yeah.
Yep. That's the way to do it. Now, everybody, most people, what they do is I want to gain muscle. Well, I'm going to buy weight gain of 4,000. I'm going to eat a 16 ounce steak tonight. And I'm going to have a 6 egg omelet and I'm going to drink milk or whatever it is. And then I'm going to get gut rot. And, you know, I'm going to be the dickhead in the car farting all the time that nobody wants to be around because he smells and he's gassy. And, you know, I'm going to be slow and groggy. And, you know, I got this backlog in my gut. My digestion's not that good anymore. Now I'm bloated. My hips, kind of feel my hips now. And then I got the moves starting to grow. I mean, that's the typical weight gain guy. Weight gain. I'm lifting out, but I'm getting stronger. I added 10 pounds on my bench press and like my jeans don't fit. You know, that's that guy. Or you can be the living lean guy and you can slowly and very precisely and intentionally increase your parameters, your performance parameters. Based upon the data, you can analyze the data and just make minor adjustments and get exactly where you want to be. You can be very analytical and efficient about it. You know, you can run it like a business, as you should, like a high-level business. Your body. It's your body. It's your life. Run it better than your business, bitches.
Our next question is from Michael Hell. He says, Mike, I'm a 44-year-old dedicated Muay Thai and BJJ practitioner who is just getting off of a knee injury. I've been unable to train for about 3 months, so my conditioning has taken a huge hit. Prior to injury, I was training 4 to 5 days a week and was in great shape. I've been cleared to start training again. Can you suggest some preliminary work to get my conditioning back? I'm dreading those first few rolls, knowing that my gas tank is kind of low at this point.
Michael, what's up, man? 44 years old, and you are stoked to get back into training. I love that. So I'm assuming you're under a doctor's care. I'm assuming you are working with a physical therapist. You might have been released by. So make sure that you can do all these exercises and take any of these suggestions back to your doctor. Get approval. That's very important. You never want to come back from an injury too soon. I'd rather you wait 2 weeks than come back 2 seconds too soon. That is the rule when dealing with athletes, especially multi-million dollar elite professional athletes. But their body is no different than my body because my body is my multi-million dollar asset, right? And yours is also. You don't want to be on the sidelines of your life. So, you know, do the PT, do the time, you know, make sure you're healthy. When that's done, start walking. Use it. Gain flexibility. Get it in a pool, kind of, you know, flip around in a pool a little bit, swim around, do a lot of, you probably did with your physical therapist, lots of rotational work inside your pool, you know, through your ankles, all ranges of motion. You can do the alphabet, count to 100, whatever, just, you know, unilaterally single foot, you know, single leg or double both at the same time, opposite directions, you know, so you can have some fun with those exercises and even up to your knee and around and in your hips if you're inside the pool. Those are great ways to get back. Those are great prehab exercises, also used as rehab exercises. I like to see my athletes do that constantly. You know, every couple of weeks, we go through training phases, we get the pool work in, and we just move the limbs, you know, move the joints through full ranges of motion. You know, we really, you know, kind of increase the flexibility and the coordination in those areas. So you start doing that, you start walking, now you can build up a pace and a tolerance. You can start to see how you feel. If you start to feel good, well, now maybe you can get on a cycle, you can get on a bike, you can get on the rowing machine, you can do an elliptical. You can, I'd say, start off on a treadmill initially just because the ground's nice and even, build up some strength. And then you can go on to, you know, tracks, paved tracks, nice tracks, the local high school, college track. That's a great way to do it. Increase your ability from there, you know, and then start doing, you know, lateral jogs backwards, sideways, you know, start doing some body weight work, body weight conditioning, exercise, just simple stuff. Body weight squats, single leg squats, jump squats, burpees, push-ups, you know, different things like that, core exercises. And you'll know, you'll start feeling froggy. You know, that's when you want to walk back into the gym. I mean, you want to start going to the gym and do just a little bit, but it sounds like you're going to get back in there. You're going to start going. And you don't want to train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Muay Thai when you're not in a pretty solid physical state. Get back in class. I mean, during this time, when you're feeling pretty good again, you can get back in the gym and start your body will – and what the issue is, your body must withstand unpredictable motion in MMA. And this is why a lot of people get hurt. Your body must be able to withstand unpredictable resistance curves. That's what happens. That's why people get hurt all the time, because their body does not understand, cannot deal with, is not flexible or strong enough or what have you, cannot go that way, and it breaks. And there's also, you know, overuse issues, guys. You know, they've been hurt for years and years and years. It builds up and things just eventually pop on something simple. You know, Michael, that's what I really need. I want to see you strong and healthy and fit, that you can really conduct yourself in your own space. You can move your body. You can do 20 chin-ups. You can do 100 body weight squats. You can bang out, you know, 150. But you can do all these things in your own space. And then you can enter back into contact with an unpredictable individual, even if they're a great training partner. And I'd say start in a novice class. Hey, coach, can I just jump into the, you know, the entry level, the white belt, the kids class? Just, you know, move a little bit and, you know, kind of like Happy Gilmore. And then just, you know, kind of move up grades as your body develops. There we go. All right, guys, I got to jump off here. Yep. Thank you very much. Good Q&A, man. I love these Q&As. I wish I could do it forever, but I got to jump off. We'll be back on soon. We got Mark Lehman coming up. We're talking all things Johnny Hendrix, video gaming. Listen to the way Mark breaks down sport. Well, the way he breaks down jiu-jitsu. If you guys never heard of it, I mean, the way he breaks stuff down, it's really interesting. I enjoy it, and I think you guys will enjoy it a lot. It's philosophical as much as it is very technical. I mean, it's chess. It's a mathematical equation when it comes to Lehman, and it's fun to hear him break that stuff down. He's a smart guy. Yeah, and all the stuff from the beginning, hopefully the commissions and the people. I don't even know who's involved. You know, I want to touch on that real quick. I don't know who's involved completely in all that. I know the commissions, they're the one that sanction. They're the one that say it's okay, and the promoters kind of have to go along with everything the commission say, because the commission oversees the promoters and is supposed to, you know, be in the benefit of the health and to protect the health and safety of the athlete. That's as I understand it to be. So if that's the case, health and safety, it should come from the commission that everybody should be tested completely all the way around, everybody. That should be the goal. Now, maybe we can't get to the goal in fiscal year 2013, but first quarter of 2014, they can implement this step and then this step and then this step, and they can slowly build it out. Come on, guys. I'm not the smartest guy in this room. I'm not. There's a lot of smart people that do this for a living at very high levels. They can't get together and put this shit together. You can't get a couple smart finance dudes, a couple smart attorneys, a couple smart doctors. They can't sit in the room. They can't go to lunch, go to Applebee's, and come up with a sketch out a pretty good plan. Bullshit. Of course you can. So get to it, guys. I can help in any way I can. I'm sure you guys, all of us, the whole audience, everybody in the MMA industry, I know the athletes will do it. I mean, come on. That's the answer. Don't we want to be talking about the bigger things? Don't we want our kids looking at the big fights? Superman versus Batman. You know, don't you want to inspire that? I mean, these MMA guys, they're good guys. They're good guys. They're good people. They're hardworking people. The guys and the girls. There's men and women professionally competing in the UFC. I mean, this sport, like no other, allows an opportunity that very few sports do. The opportunities here in MMA, you know, in mixed martial arts, in this world, in this industry, it's like soccer. It's global. It's uniting. It's a good thing. Why not make it good? To make it good, test everybody. Test everything. Everything's under a microscope now anyway. Right, all your phone calls, all your emails, all your everything's under a microscope now anyway. If you're going to compete MMA, if you're going to kick punch somebody in the face, well, don't fucking cheat, man. If you're not cheating, then everybody gets the blood work done, and that's the end of it. And then you don't have to worry about that other dude across the cage doing something, because he can't. He can't, he won't, because he knows you can't. So you're not, and you're not going to, and that's simple. Imagine if they had that in the NFL. Those guys wouldn't have to be 350 fucking pounds. They'd be 250-pound men again. right? If they looked across the line and they saw a guy they knew was randomly blood tested 24 hours a day, any day throughout the year, and would lose his job, his ability to earn his income, if he tested positive, that guy would be 250 pounds again, still athletic as fuck. Still a hard hit and lay you on your ass, motherfucker. Imagine that. Wouldn't that be a wonderful world? That's all. I mean, how simple is that? That makes perfect sense, right? Perfect sense, everybody. So let's get that done. Let's keep talking about this. This is a big issue. I think we can certainly turn the tide and get this moving in the right direction. Help these guys. Health and safety of the athlete, but also the growth, the health and safety of the sport, man. Don't turn me off to the sport like you did to baseball. You know, that don't do that to us. Don't do that to the population. This is a great sport. Gives so many opportunities to so many great people. I mean, inspires, you know, cultures and worlds to come together. You know, everybody understands this. It's sport. It's competition. It's one of the earliest Olympic sports ever. This right here, you know. And it's easy. Just God darn, just find them. Don't make it about money. It's about the money. Don't make it about the money. Make it about the athletes, the health of the athletes. Test everybody. It's easy. It's done. Find that money. All right, guys. The Mike Dolce Show, episode 22, is in the books. Thank you, F4, everything. Remember, check out our Facebook page, The Dolce Diet. We get all of our Q&A questions from our Facebook page. Just leave them. We check them. We go through everything. We pull the ones that jump out. You know, we don't really have a specific method. We just pull them. So you could be pulled, and we're going to try and get to everybody every time. We're going to pull them every day. We're going to do as many as we can. So keep those coming, and look at the content we have on there. Lots of photos, behind the scenes, videos, you know, diet, health tips, posted. You know, we post a lot of stuff from you guys too. What an awesome community. I mean, you guys freaking kick ass. Awesome, strong community. We are badass. You know, everybody involved in this lifestyle, and it's not my lifestyle. It's not yours. It's our, because we're all moving towards that right direction. We're all trying to get better and be better and help those around us get better. Because that makes us better. So we're all just trying to get better. That's what I want to do, guys. And I thank you because you guys make me better. Check me out on Twitter at The Dolce Diet. Every Sunday I do that Q&A for you guys. I do it, you know, just because I love to speak with you, just like I do right now. All right, guys. We'll be talking soon. Remember, don't count calories. Make calories count. Boom.
The Mike Dolce Show.
Cause you can't.